This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hey, hey, thanks for joining us. A lot happening in sports. Major League Baseball, plenty of drama, both on and off the field, which is just how we like it. We waited a long time for this. NBA restarting in mere hours. The NHL is not far behind. NFL training camp intake right now with their testing. They're preparing to get on the field for full squad workouts sometime very soon. And we've got a lot of different audio from around the league, including quarterbacks. We're asking you as well, when you think about the NFL Network Top 10, and this is voted on by the players, the Top 10, easy to find. Check it out on NFL.com. It's been all over social media, the players themselves commenting. Who isn't in the Top 10 that deserves to be there? Who's in the Top 10 that you think it's a little bit hokey? On Twitter, A-Law Radio, or on our show Twitter, After Hours CBS. And then our Facebook page as well. We've got a poll up. Do you believe that Joe Kelly acted solo? Or do you think that he was throwing at the Astros with the encouragement of his Dodgers teammates? So again, you can find us on either Twitter or Facebook. Phone number is 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. Just before the show, I had a chance to connect with longtime college football coach Tommy Bowden. He told me he had been awake an hour past his bedtime just so he could talk to me, and also said he would be asleep 7 minutes after we got done talking. But it was just before the show, and it was really good to catch up with him with a lot of his experience and the wisdom that he carries from a lifetime in the sport. We wanted to get his reaction to the ACC's announcement on Wednesday. So, Coach, the ACC voted to implement an 11-game season. There are a lot of different ideas that were thrown out there, but they're going to go with this 11-game slate that begins in mid-September. What's your reaction to that move?
Yeah, I think it's as good as what any conference has put on the table. I think you will get a true champion from the ACC. The fact you're playing 10 games, they got one non-conference opponent, but the fact they've got the two open dates in there in case of some of this pandemic mess creeps up on them. So as far as the 10 games, there's 14 teams. You're playing 10 of them. The four lucky people are the four people that don't have to play Clemson.
That's true. Good point. So with the flexibility and allowing a couple of open dates, how much more confident does that make you that the ACC will be able to go forward with this?
Well, I just think it gives you so much flexibility. But, you know, right now, this is something that nobody has answers to. You know, mm-hmm. In the 32 years I coached, we had a hurricane game move from the first year to the end of the year when I was a head coach at Tulane. We had a hurricane where the players were gone 4 or 5 days, and then we had 9/11 where games were postponed. But This is something that there's no background on. So the two open dates seems like a good idea. But again, we have no idea whether the pandemic's going to get better or going to get worse. And if it gets worse, then I don't think we'll be playing. And the two open dates will be irrelevant.
Right. And football is a unique sport, of course, because there's no way to keep players from not being all clumped together. There's no way to prevent the sharing of fluids. And so obviously the testing becomes so critical. As a former coach, what are your major concerns when you think about bringing your guys onto campus and getting started, which they would be doing this time of year?
Well, I think one of the biggest things, you know, when you recruit a young man, you sit in his home to his mom and his dad, and you tell the mother that, hey, I'll take care of him. I'll treat him just like my children. He's in good hands. Then all of a sudden you have a pandemic or a disease that right now we don't have a cure for. So there's a lot of sensitivity right there about the measures that you're going to take to protect their son. And I think that's would be more of a concern for me, sitting and looking that mother in the eye and say, hey, I'll take care of him. And then, you know, right now with there is some racial insensitivity right now that at least has been alluded to some in college football. And now you throw a little health issues, health insensitivity. It's you have to walk a fine line, no doubt about it.
Have to be really careful what you say, but also really careful what you do. Coach Tommy Bowden, formerly of Clemson and Tulane, with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. How would you address the locker room, Coach, when you consider a lot of younger people don't necessarily have the same fear or anxiety about the virus?
Well, you really don't. I think that's going to it's going to take some great policing by not only your medical staff. Your medical staff is limited with your trainers and your team doctors, but I think more so your support staff and your full-time staff are really going to have to be educated about what's going to be allowed. Because like you say, at that age, you know, there's no way you fear death. You know, you just don't at that age. It's going to affect everybody but you. So I think that's where the wisdom of staff and support staff and medical staff is really going to have to be a major factor, especially in the locker room environment. You know, you've got space on practice fields and on the game field, but you don't in the locker room.
Right.
That's really going to have to be monitored.
My mom is a teacher. She's been a math teacher for years and years. In fact, she was my math teacher in high school, believe it or not. And she's concerned as she gets ready to go back to school, not about the virus so much, but about getting kids to remain distant, getting kids to keep their masks on. And she kind of thinks that kids, once they walk out the front door, will kind of rip off their masks. But you're saying that it's really going to be on the coaching staff to police this and to do as much as you can to see what these kids are doing and how they're doing it.
Yeah, I think it is, because you take the wisdom of a 19 or 20-year-old and you take the wisdom of a coach that's in his 40s or 50s or early 60s, right around there. There's just a lot more discipline, a lot more wisdom, and young people just don't have it. That's something that takes time, the patience, the perseverance, the wisdom that comes with age, they don't have. So I think some of the responsibility and the burden then goes on the athletic department, the athletic staff, the medical staff, and how they govern it.
Coach, do you believe it's wisdom to try to move forward with a season, knowing what you know about college football and how, as you point out, it's a lot of kids and a lot of, you know, 19, 20-year-olds?
I haven't done nearly the research that I'm sure all these athletic directors and college presidents and medical staffs have done at the universities. And the ACC, you know, the years that I spent there, about 10 years as a head coach, they really, really do a lot of research on anything that they do. So I'm sure this has been researched. And medically, they think they have a way forward. I don't think they would try it. I know finances are really tight right now.
Sure.
And but I just don't think the decision would be made with what's gone on the last few months as far as insensitive. Necessary to some of the athletes' needs, whether it be racial or whether it be health-wise. I don't think they would jeopardize that.
Longtime football coach Tommy Bowden with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. So let me ask you this. Why is college football so vital to campus life, especially in some of these places where it really is a lifeblood? Why is it so important to try if you can?
Well, you know, I've been in a couple of different environments as assistant coach and head coach at private school, small private schools like Duke as an assistant, Tulane as a head coach in this larger city. But some of the cities that I've coached in, Tuscaloosa, Auburn, Clemson, even Morgantown as a player and as a young coach, you know, the community evolves around those universities, and college athletics is such a big part of it, such a big part of the industry with either hotel, motel, retail industry. And it's a unique environment. And college athletics, at least in the Southeast where they think football was invented, it's a part of the culture, and it's a religious type environment where it's a 24/7. It's such a huge part of the lifestyle of people at least in the South, where I've spent most of my time.
Now, as someone who's been part of a lot of different traditions in college football, Coach, can you imagine the games without fans or with very few fans in the stands? What would that be like?
Nobody knows. and you mentioned that. I think back when I was at Clemson, probably the most unique experience in all the places I've been was to for the team to come out of the locker room, go opposite the game field, get on a bus, get police escort, and drive around the stadium and run down a hill. I'm sure they're going to eliminate that bus ride, because close quarters right there, they'll probably knock that out. So traditions like that, and then like you said, fans in the stands, I would say that the coaches will know a lot better how to respond to that after the first week, because it's never been done. But there'll be a huge learning curve after that first week in college football about how to coach your players up on week two with no fans.
Now, would you prefer the piped-in crowd noise that maybe would mask some of the communications? So I've heard this from other football players, that they wouldn't want it to be dead quiet because what they're saying then would be picked up on microphones.
I don't know if so much that would be an environment as they practice, most of them, at least all week, with no fan noise. And if you're not going to have the fan, to me, at least pipe the noise in and make it as realistic as possible for your players, because, they are 18, 19, 20. You can trick them just a little bit. I'm mentioning how much wisdom they had. Some of them, I had a lot of players that have never had your mother in math class. I can tell you that. They would avoid her at all games. So I'd pipe it in and tell them to squint. When I played at Tulane, we played in the Superdome and had colored seats.
Wow.
And we didn't draw very well. So I said, players, just squint. If I just squint and look up there, it looked like there's people in the stands. So now I know why they have colored seats in those places.
Now, did that work? Because you did have an 11-0 season when you were at Tulane.
Yeah, it worked that first year. They found out they was pretty good that second year. They didn't care about the stands. But I bought mannequins that second year and stuck them up there. And they looked like they were fans.
Oh, that's hysterical. Kind of like what baseball's doing right now with cardboard cutouts in the stands.
I was way ahead of this pandemic. I can say that at Tulane.
Coach Tommy Bowden with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. Clemson has turned into a national power. You were part of that building process. What do you think of Coach Swinney?
Well, I knew so much about Dad because I coached him and then I hired him as an assistant. And I remember talking to the athletic director when he decided to make a change. I said, I really thought Dabo had all the intangibles, just his personalities, relationship with players. I think wives are awful important and staff chemistry. He was able to do that. But the reason I hired him was his recruiting resume. Mm. And the longer I coached, I figured out that the team of the best players usually wins. He is the best recruiter. Some head coach, I thought Urban Meyer was a great head coach that recruited. I thought Ron Zook was a great head coach that recruited. Dabo Swinney might be the best head. A lot of coaches, a lot of staffs have a couple of assistants that are really good, and head coaches lose interest. But he's the best recruiter on that staff, and I think that's what sets him apart.
And did he always have such big dreams? I mean, he's been talking about wanting to turn Clemson into a national power long before it happened.
Yeah, I wish if I'd have known that, I would have let him be head coach when I was there. He would have shared some of that vision with me. I said, yeah, you'll sit in my chair for a little bit. But, he's always had, he has had those visions. He, of course, as a position coach, you don't get to share them as much as he would have liked because his responsibilities were a little more limited. But he has surely been a great surprise, I know, for the university.
What was your favorite part about coaching?
Probably the relationship with the players. I still hear a lot from players now. Of course, I live at the beach, so a lot of them come on vacation down here. They'll come by and see me or talk. One of them came by in a boat. I live on the water down here. One of them came by a boat the other day and called me and say, I'm out here in the back. Come on out. But probably the relationship with the players more so than anything.
Coach, before I let you go, I have to ask about your dad because he's beloved by so many college football fans. How is Bobby Bowden doing?
I appreciate you asking. I'm actually going to go over to Tallahassee this weekend. He, of course, he's 90 now.
Wow.
Mother's 87, but they're both in really good health. He can't walk really, really well. He uses a cane a little bit, but as far as his mind and his major faculties are all good. My mother's mind is good. So really fortunate to have, you know, him at 90 and my mother at 87. I'll go over, spend the weekend, and watch him fall asleep with a channel changer laying on his belly right there, and I'll have to go over and try to sneak and get it off. But still, I appreciate you asking. I'll tell him you're asking about him when I see him this weekend.
Is he still just as funny as he always was?
Yeah, he really is. You know, I'm going to speak at my home church this weekend. Him and mother are going to come over.
Aww.
I said, I'm used to speaking with you and being your setup man, but you're going to have to sit out there and you're not going to get to get up and get the microphone. I'm going to blast you for about 45 minutes. So better stay awake.
That's awesome. I'm so glad they're safe. What was the maybe one of the critical things that you learned from your dad about coaching?
You know, the very first job I had was coaching a secondary at East Carolina, I think in 1980. And I was a young graduate assistant in Tallahassee, and he took me to the airport and had my luggage getting on there, packed and going away. He gave me two pieces of advice. He said, in this profession, you better have a lot of patience and you better have a lot of perseverance.
Mm.
And that might be one of the best things, because it is a very challenging, a lot of stress, tough on a marriage. I've been married now for 43 years, so it's tough on family. You raise everybody's children but your own. And some of those things I learned from him. And of course, he's a strong Christian coach, and walking down those stairs in the morning and seeing him reading the Bible, he still does it. He'll be doing it this weekend while I go over. He does it with a micro. He's got a daggone magnifying glass now.
Yes.
To see the words. But those are some things I've taken with me that have really been helpful for me and staying in coaching for so long.
Isn't that so appropriate for 2020? Patience and perseverance. We could all use a little more of that. Well, thank you so much for sharing about your family. As I say, lots of people wonder about Coach Bowden, and he's beloved by so many. And Coach Tommy Bowden, it's great to catch up with you. I hope we can have you on the show again sometime soon.
Hey, y'all have a good evening. We'll do it again once the season cranks up.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
2-0 pitch. Driven deep to right center field. That ball crushed by Markakis. That ball is gone into the basket. It's a 3-run home run for Nick Markakis. He crushed that ball to right center. And the Braves lead now is 5-0.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
On the Braves Radio Network, Nick Markakis, a familiar name for Atlanta baseball fans and also for Baltimore baseball fans. He spent the good chunk of his career, early portion of his career with the Baltimore Orioles. And now in his sixth season with Atlanta, he has done a major about face in 2020. I didn't realize this was even possible. To be honest, I didn't know a player could change his mind. But apparently, he can. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4227. Also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. And then you can find our show Twitter, After Hours CBS. Take our poll about Joe Kelly and the Dodgers, or you can find my Twitter. I'll run down the NFL's top 10 in a minute here so you can hear the names again and let me know. These are voted on by fellow players. Who you think is woefully misrepresented or has a bit of a bloated ranking. But back to Nick Markakis. 3 weeks ago, he announced he would opt out of the shortened season because he was concerned about the coronavirus. It's an option that's been given to every single pro athlete, whether you're high risk or not, whether you're concerned about the virus or you just don't want to play in 2020. Let's be honest, there are actually athletes who have chosen not to play because they don't need to worry about their financial security and because they think it'd be better for them to sit out. They're not all sitting out because of the virus, and they don't need to. Some of them are sitting out because of their protests over social injustice and feeling like they can do more good by not participating. We've got all kinds of reasons, but they don't even need to give a reason. All they have to say is, I'm not playing this year. Now, in some cases, they won't get paid. In other cases, if they are high risk in terms of health, they will still get paid some, but they can't lose their spot on the team. So Nick Markakis sat out summer camp and the first five games of the season, watched his teammates play, and then had a major change of heart. And maybe it was coming over the course of the last week or so once the Braves got back on the field. He says there was a pit in my stomach because of how badly I wanted to be out there. And so 3 weeks after opting out, the veteran outfielder is opting in.
I talked to my teammates. I talked to Alex and Snit and all those guys. And, you know, I'd like to come back sitting at home watching these guys, you know, compete the last couple of days and all the risks that they're taking going out there. You know, I just, in a way, deep down in, you know, that pit in my stomach, I felt like I needed to be out there, and you know, I had the opportunity to be welcomed back, and you know, here I am. I'm gonna do my best to get back as quick as I can and help these guys out.
Something else that Nick said that I appreciate, I'm not sure it's necessary, but I do appreciate hearing it from him. He believes he bailed out on his teammates. That's the feeling that he has, the emotion that he has. I dumped them. I bailed out on them. And he says, I plan to apologize whenever I have the chance to address the team. Again, I don't know if you feel it's necessary. I'm not even sure I feel it's necessary. If these are legit health concerns, I don't think any athlete owes anyone anything except for an honest, candid explanation. And if you are a teammate of an athlete who has chosen not to play for health concerns, right? If there are guys out there who choose not to play simply because they don't need the money and don't actually feel like going at it this year, they think their physical bodies would be better off with a year away from the game. That's a little different. To me, that's different. But that's the way that these leagues have set it up. In the case of Markakis, he said he was really uneasy about playing the season without fans. So that was kind of where it started. This goes back to the beginning of July. And then when he heard about what Freddie Freeman was going through, he was even more anxious over playing this year. Now, you remember there were a handful of Braves that tested positive going into summer camp. If I'm not mistaken, only one of them, and that was Freeman, had serious symptoms. A couple of the guys were asymptomatic. Another guy barely had any symptoms at all. It was Freeman who really struggled. His wife was on social media saying it hit him like a ton of bricks because Freddie never gets sick. He said that it was really hard for him, and he had a high fever of 104 and a half degrees. And that's a high fever. And so Nick Markakis admits when he was hearing Freeman's story and Freeman's struggles, that's where he got really nervous. And he says he looks around baseball right now and he actually thinks that the game is in worse shape than it was before, referring to the Marlins situation. Now, I say I don't know that I agree with him there, but he's certainly entitled to his own opinion, as am I. I feel like baseball is actually in really good shape. As much as the Marlins have become the poster kids for personal responsibility and accountability and what can happen if one or two of you step outside the lines and go rogue, as much as I believe that that's scary for a lot of players, at the same time, the fact that there have been no other positive tests in baseball since last Friday, that's phenomenal. I mean, that's amazing. It's a testament to what can happen when the entire clubhouse and the staff is working together. And I'm not sure if you know this, but the umpires are actually traveling with the teams in some cases. So they're putting them on the same flight so that the umpires can remain safe on flights that have been deep cleaned and in atmospheres where they know everyone has tested negative. But Freeman says he's not sure baseball's in a better place, but that it sucks watching when you know you can still go out there and compete on a daily basis. He admits it was eating away at him a little bit. So after 3 weeks, Nick Markakis becomes the first athlete to change his mind, to opt out and then opt back in. He had a phone call with Braves GM Alex Anthopoulos, and it was actually a possibility. He said he didn't even realize he was allowed to return. And he also says he has the full support of his family. Here's his quote. More than anything, I know my family wanted me to be out there with the Braves. I think this is neat. I mean, a guy who has changed his mind and has the option of changing his mind. Sometimes we make career decisions and we can't go back. But Nick can, and he'll be great for the Braves, and the fact that he's got the support of his family, and I believe he's being courageous. He's being brave because he's not completely comfortable with it. But how many of these guys are? And they're doing it anyway because they're getting paid to do it, because it's good for their families, and because it's what they love. He says, I've been doing this since I was 4 years old. So Nick Markakis, at some point, has to go through testing, obviously. We'll see how quickly he joins them, but the Braves have yet to play their home opener. If I understand, I didn't look at their schedule, but the Braves have been on the road, and as you can imagine, I'm sure that they played their home opener on Wednesday, so they're looking forward to getting this veteran back.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Lamar Jackson on second down, wants to throw, goes to the end zone, looks for Seth Roberts, and delivers a dime! Touchdown, Seth Roberts! A perfect throw from Lamar Jackson, and the Ravens are making it look easy with 58 seconds left to play in the third quarter. The hay's in the barn!
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Jerry Sandusky on the on the Ravens radio network. I was thinking Braves and Nick Markakis. We had Jerry Sandusky on the show earlier in the midst of the pandemic, maybe going back to April, and he was so much fun. And the Baltimore Ravens, of course, put out a nice, we'll call it super cool, a little video for their MVP debuting at number one, the NFL Top 100, unveiled by the NFL Network over the last Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, four nights. And they wrapped up with the top 10 on Wednesday night. And even though he's on the list for the first time, Lamar Jackson is that number one spot. And so it's kind of cool to see the video and also just in general to think about the possibilities with Lamar Jackson. We're going to hear from him as well as a couple of other quarterbacks after the top of the hour. We'll do some QB news and not just Lamar's new nickname for himself. He did this all by himself. But the plans that Zach Taylor has for Joe Burrow in Cincinnati, also in the AFC North. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Here is the top 10. According to player votes, so this is not media, this is not fans, it's not a popularity contest. This is about the players themselves and who they think are the best in the league going into 2020. Number one is Lamar Jackson. So the NFL MVP had a record-breaking season, and he sits at number one, according to his peers. Number two, also a quarterback, Russell Wilson, 31 touchdowns, only 5 interceptions as the Seahawks made the playoffs last season. Aaron Donald, highest-ranked defensive player, number three, and he's made the Pro Bowl in every season in which he's played. He's also been an All-Pro, which is even harder to achieve, 5 consecutive years. He had last season 20 tackles for loss and 12 and a half sack. So number three on the list is Aaron Donald of the Rams. Number four is the Super Bowl MVP. How about that? He's the third quarterback on the list, and he's fourth overall. Crazy, right? Considering what he did and how he sparked his teammates. What was it? 3 double-figure deficits in the fourth quarter, including the Super Bowl. And we were dazzled by the way that he performed. And he wasn't the only one. He got plenty of help. In fact, I'm not sure if you saw the Chiefs news on Wednesday, but a second starter from that Super Bowl win is actually opting out of the season because of the coronavirus. Damian Williams has informed the Chiefs that he will sit out the 2020 season. Now, they have a couple of other running backs on their roster. In fact, they drafted one out of LSU. And Damian Williams, he only had 6 starts in 2019, but he was the top rusher on the Chiefs roster, just shy of 500 yards. Now, they have a versatile offense. They've got A lot of quick and fast guys who can either carry the ball out of the backfield or catch the ball in the flat or go deep. I mean, they really like to mix it up, all that misdirection, not to mention the creativity of Mahomes himself. But they won't have Damian Williams, as he's decided that he's not going to participate in 2020. Patrick Mahomes at number four. Michael Thomas of the Saints at number five, 149 catches last season. Christian McCaffrey at number six after a 1,000-yard season, only the third of those in NFL history, and he was way over 1,000 yards on the ground. But incredible performance for him last year, earned him a contract extension. George Kittle, highest spot ever claimed by a tight end at number seven, higher than Gronk ever was on the list. Number eight is DeAndre Hopkins, the new Cardinals weapon. Number nine, Stephon Gilmore, so the second defensive player on the list, the Patriots cornerback who was the AP Defensive Player of the Year, and you remember how suffocating and stingy that Patriots defense was. He was tops in the league with a half dozen interceptions. And then number 10 on the list, Derrick Henry. Incredible surge at the end of the regular season into the postseason. And he also holds the NFL rushing title for last season with 1,540 yards. That's your top 10. Where do you feel like players need to move up or down? Or who do you feel like is missing from this top 10? You can find us on Twitter, After Hours CBS. There's also a place on our Facebook page, 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line, and it's sponsored by Geico. Did you know right now Geico offers an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies, and it's on top of what Geico can already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. Again, QB news coming up after the top of the hour. It's kind of cool to hear these coaches and quarterbacks and different players around the league speaking out from their own facilities or getting ready to launch into a full training camp. Right now, it's more about the intake testing and making sure they got the equipment and everybody's on the same page. But could you imagine their excitement in some of their cases? Not all of them, because some of these guys were working out together. We know that. But in many cases, these teammates haven't seen each other in months. No OTAs other than Zoom calls, which, you know, it's not the same thing, as I'm sure you discovered during the spring and summer. So you can find us either on Twitter or Facebook. Also, our phone number, 855-212-4227. And we'll get you some QB news after the top of the hour. One more quick note about the Baltimore Ravens. And this is important just because so many of you have sent me Facebook messages or have also found me on Twitter. You may have heard me talking on Tuesday morning about the loss of superfan, Baltimore superfan Mo Gabba, at 14 years old, just turned 14 years old. He was battling cancer a fourth time, and both the Orioles and the Baltimore Ravens and the Orioles adopted him, and he became an inspiration to them. And the Orioles actually issued a special edict and a certificate. He became just the second fan ever to be inducted into their Hall of Fame. If you have not seen the video that the Orioles used in tribute before their game on Wednesday evening, I am begging you to go and watch it on my Twitter here. I'll retweet it so it's easy to find. And it's not so much because of what the Orioles did. They did a moment of silence. It was great. I mean, it was very nicely done, and they honored him and they read a little bit of his story. But the part that blew me away, that brought me to tears, is that as part of this video tribute, they included Mo. So Mo's sweet voice, the one that used to call us here at CBS Sports Radio, he recorded a video before the season started encouraging the Orioles, telling them how he understood that it would be weird without fans, but that they were pulling for him. And he was pulling for them, and that he counted many of them as friends. And so in the midst of this 3-minute tribute video, you can find that A-Law Radio, or you can go to the Orioles Twitter. You get to hear Mo talking. It's precious and it's sweet, and it really moved me. And their tribute was very well done on the field, the players all standing and watching and then doing a moment of silence. But for me, it was wonderful to hear Mo's sweet voice on that pregame tribute. So please check it out. And then I mentioned the Ravens. The Ravens also did put their own special tribute up for Mo on their Twitter as well. And They have it pinned to the top of their Twitter account if you wanted to check it out. He was there and honored at a game recently, and they put a whole video together where he's on the field with his mom. And it's just, it's, again, so well done and so kind, and I think highlights the spirit of Mo and how excited he was to be a part of these events. And so we miss Mo Gabba. And I know many of you, as I say, have reached out to me to thank me for talking about him on the show. You don't have to thank me. I was pleased to have those text messages exchanged with him last week. And I'm so glad that I had a back and forth conversation with him. And it'll always be something that I remember. In fact, I still have the text messages on my phone, so I won't delete those. But check out the video from the Orioles. And then if you want, you can also go to the Ravens Twitter account, or maybe Dave can retweet both of those from our show account. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. I'm actually writing my CBS Sports Minute about Nick Markakis and his decision to opt back in to the 2020 season after he opted out 3 weeks ago. Again, I didn't realize this was an option, but he's the first, and apparently it is still an open door in baseball if the team wants you back. But as I was reading more about, and we're trying to track down some more of his comments on audio because he did a big video call. I would love to share more of those with you. But as I was reading down even farther through his comments and kind of reading the whole transcript of his press conference, he said he's relying on the organization that he's with. He's trusting Major League Baseball that these health and safety protocols are going to work. And as we've talked about, other than the Marlins, they are working. But this is a quote that I may actually put on social media. Everybody in this world is taking risks on a daily basis. You can't hide and run from it every single day. My teammates are out there every day taking risks, and me sitting home watching them on TV just didn't sit well with me. And then he goes on to say, as I pointed out, that he plans to apologize to his teammates. So he got nervous about it. He saw Freddie Freeman's struggles. But 3 weeks later, after 3 weeks of watching, he can't deal with it anymore. And you know what else it reminded me of? And it's great that Nick has the option of going back, because many players do not. How many times does an athlete get cut? Can't find another job. He's a free agent. He's bouncing around. Whether it's a guy who's played for over a decade or whether it's a guy who's relatively young and believes he has a lot more to give. We've had Will Blackman, former Packer, on the show a bunch. And he has indicated to me that he tried for 2 years to get back on the field. He's worked out. He had workouts with teams. He really had a hard time finally letting that go. He even went to London last year to have a workout on site in London. Flew to London so that he could work out for a team. That's how badly he wanted to get back to it. How about Daniel Bard, the Rockies pitcher that we highlighted to start the week? Out of Major League Baseball for 8 seasons and just got a chance to play again. And he kept trying and he kept trying. Spent last year as a mental skills coach for the Diamondbacks. Nick Markakis has the option of going back. Many athletes, once they get cut, once they become free agents, don't ever find their way back. And if you're Markakis, you're experiencing a bit of what it's like to be forced into retirement. So many athletes feel like their time ends long before they have run out of the ability to contribute. You know, they've gotten past that. And Markakis is blessed enough to have the chance to go back. And I'm sure he's not going to take it for granted. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.